Okay, welcome and Hare Krishna. So first we're going to chant Jai Radha Madhava as we normally do. Jai Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Gopi Janab Balagopa Giribadadhadi Gopi Janab Balaba Giribadadhadi Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachadi Yamuna Tira Banachadi Jaya Randha Madhuva Kunja Vihaudi Jaya Randha Madhuva Kunja Vihaudi Gopi Janamalaba Giribadadhaudi Gopi Janamalaba Giribadadhaudi Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Randha Madhuva Kunja Vihari Jaya Randha Madhuva Kunja Vihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravidakacharya also Teta Siddhi Shimad His Divine Grace Avaya Chandanana Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantagoti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Vidas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Se Goho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Vaidhi Garadha Shri Vasudhi Gaur Vakta Vrindhi Vijaya Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Shyam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Vritvaradam Ki Jai Navadipdam Ki Jai Jagadatasami Ki Jai Yamunamai Ki Jai Shrimati Gulasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Pakta Vrindhi Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Shinivari Paschacha Deja Tarani. So, Omagana Timidanda Shaganjana Shmakaya Chakshun Unmiditam Yenatasmai Shigarve Maha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So now we're going to continue with our Bhagavad Gita discussion. So hold on a second. We're going to share our screen. We're on the 14th chapter and we're going to begin with text 7 today. Here we go. So remember, this chapter is about the three modes of material nature. And as we mentioned many times before, that more verses are dedicated to the three modes of material nature and the different aspects of the three modes of material nature in the Bhagavad Gita than any other topic. And why is that important? Because we are under the three modes of material nature, and we should be able to identify the three modes of material nature. We should be able to understand who and what to associate with and who and what to not associate with. Because these three modes of nature affect every aspect of our lives. That means, every aspect of our lives means what we eat, who we associate with, what type of music we listen to, etc. That's why Krishna spends so much time on the three modes of nature, because that's where we're at right now. We are, of course, if you're a devotee, we mentioned this yesterday, if you're actually following the practices and principles of Krishna consciousness, you're not controlled by the three modes. That is true. But you may be influenced by the three modes until you come to the point of pure devotional service. So be able to identify, like if you find yourself getting really out of control and angry, instead of just thinking, I'm out of control and angry, or not even being aware of it, just thinking, one should think, ooh, the mode of ignorance is becoming prominent. And then when you really want something, you look on the internet and you think, I must have it, I must have it, I must have it. Then you're thinking, that is the mode of passion. And when you're looking out at the beautiful sky, as we mentioned yesterday, that occurs usually outside of my house, then you're thinking, this is goodness. And when you're in love with Krishna, ready to do whatever he wants, and only taking pleasure from his pleasure, then you're in transcendental goodness. So it's really easy to understand what mode you're in at a particular time. And interesting, we are influenced by different modes throughout the day. That's a fact. Let's say if you're sleeping in the morning and you don't want to get up, that means mode of ignorance. So even if you get up and you're thinking, I want to give class, Bhagavatam class, so everyone will appreciate how wonderful I am, or lead kirtan, so everyone will appreciate how wonderful I am, then that's the mode of passion, where you want profit, adoration, distinction. Or if you're thinking, oh, let me just go for a walk in the forest, I will also chant Hare Krishna. But walk in the forest, on the trails, through the woods, then you're influenced partially by the mode of goodness. So really, you should be able to analyze your day like that at different times of the day. Now, of course, you can use those modes in Krishna's service. Like if you're very enthusiastic, I want to build a temple for Krishna, I want to build a temple for Krishna, then you're being passionate for Krishna, so that mode of passion becomes transcendentalized like that. Or the mode of goodness. You want to have everything nice and clean in the temple. So then it becomes transcendental. Okay, let's continue reading about the modes of nature. To me, it's a very interesting, fascinating subject matter in the Bhagavad Gita. Rajo ragatmakam piti trishna sangha samudbhavan tanhi bhatnati kuntiya karmasangena dehinam. Raja, the mode of passion, ragatmakam, born of desire or lust, vidhi no, trishna, with a hankering, sangha association, samudbhavam, produce of, tat that, nibadnati, binds, kunti, o son of kunti, karma, sangena, by association with fruit of activity, day and on the body. I thought we read this one. Yeah. Actually, yeah, I think we read this. I mean, I read Bhagavad Gita continually. Yep, we read this one. Ignorance is delusion of all body. We read that one. that one. Where are my notes? All right. Let's go ahead. We read that one. Yeah, we read that one. We read that one. It's interesting. I guess my notes were up. It was increasing. Okay, let's go ahead. My notes were off on that one. Yeah, 12. You're right. All right. I remember reading all of these. Yeah. We read up to 12. Let's read 13. Prakasha pravitischa pramodo. Wait a second. Pramado mohahevacha tamasyetani jayante vipade kurunandana prakasha darkness pravitihi inactivity cha and Pramadaha, madness, moha, illusion, eva, certainly. Cha, also, tamasi, the mode of ignorance, etani, these. Jayanti are manifested vibhraday when developed, Kuru Nandana, son of Kuru. When there is an increase in the mode of ignorance of son of Kuru, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested. When there is no illumination, knowledge is absent. One in the mode of ignorance does not work by a regulated principle. He wants to act whimsically for no purpose. Even though he has the capacity to work, he makes no endeavor. This is called illusion. Although consciousness is going on, life is inactive. These are the symptoms of one in the mode of ignorance. And text 14. Yada sattve pravritte tu pralayam yati deha brit. Adottama vidham lokan amalan pratipadyate. Yada, when sattva, the mode of goodness, pravride, developed too, but pralayam, dissolution, yati goes, deya brit, the embodied, tada, at that time, uttama vidham, of the great sages, lokan, the planets, amalan, pure pratipadyate, attains. When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains to the pure, higher planets of the great sages. So Prabhupada explains, one in goodness attains higher planetary systems like Brahmaloka or Janaloka, and there enjoys godly happiness. The word amalan is significant. It means free from the modes of passion and ignorance. There are impurities in the material world, but the mode of goodness is the purest form of existence in the material world. There are different kinds of planets for different kinds of living entities. Those who die in the mode of goodness are elevated to the planets where great sages and great devotees live. Okay, text 15. This is just the destination of those in the different modes. Rajasi pralayam gatva karma sangi shujayate Tata pralinas tamasi mudayoni shujayate. Rajasi, impassion, pralayam, dissolution, gatva, attaining, karma sangishu, in the association of those engaged in fruitive activities. Jayate, takes birth, tata, similarly. Pralinaha, being dissolved, tamasi, in ignorance. Muda Yonishu, in animal species, Jayate, takes birth. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. And Prabhupada comments that some people have the impression that when the soul reaches the platform of human life, it never goes down again. This is incorrect. According to this verse, if one develops the mode of ignorance, after his death, he is degraded to an animal form of life. From there, one has to again elevate himself by an evolutionary process to come again to the human form of life. Therefore, those who are actually serious about human life should take to the mode of goodness and in good association transcend the modes and become situated in Krishna consciousness. This is the aim of human life. Otherwise, there's no guarantee that the human being will again attain to the human status. So, of course, this is a big impetus for us to preach Krishna consciousness, understanding that practically everybody out there is destined to become an animal or less in their next lives. Next verse. Karmana sukratasya hu sattvakam nimalam palam rajasastu palam dukam ajnanam tamasa palam. Karmanaha, of work. Sukratasya, pious. Ahu, is said. Sattvakam, in the mode of goodness, nirmalam, purified, palam, the result. Rajasaha, on the mode of passion, too, but palam, the result, to come, misery, ajnanam, nonsense, tamasa, the mode of ignorance, palam, the result. Translation, the result of pious action is pure, and is said to be in the mode of goodness, but action done in the mode of passion results in misery, and action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. So, of course, the action done in the mode of passion appears to be pleasurable in the beginning. But here Krishna is not talking about the beginning. He's talking about the result. And elsewhere, Krishna mentions that happiness in the mode of passion is like nectar in the beginning, or appears to be like nectar in the beginning. But the end is like poison. So anything you're just like really passionate about, you want to possess someone or enjoy in a gross physical way, it actually causes so much stress later on. And the other two, action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness, we know about that, and goodness is the result of pious activities and makes one peaceful. The result of pious activities in the mode of goodness is pure. Therefore, the great sages who are free from all illusion are situated in happiness. But activities in the mode of passion are simply miserable. Any activity for material happiness is bound to be defeated. If, for example, one wants to have a skyscraper, so much human misery has to be undergone before a big skyscraper can be built. The financier has to take much trouble to earn a mass of wealth. And those who are slaving to construct the building have to render physical toil. The miseries are there. What to speak of those who die in the construction of a skyscraper? I remember there was some story about the Empire State Building in New York, which was the original skyscraper in New York. So many people died while they were constructing it. Thus, Bhagavad Gita says that in any activity performed under the spell of mode of passion, there is definitely great misery. They may be little so-called mental happiness. I have this house or this money, but this is not actual happiness. Because you have to maintain the house, you have to maintain the money, you have to maintain your family. I mean, the more you have in this world, the more struggle there is just to maintain it or to protect it. For example, you have the story of Sanatan Goswami. Okay, let's take this story as a good illustration of this point. Sanatan Goswami, he was put in jail. Why was he put in jail? Because he wanted to leave government service, and the government happened to be run by the Nawab Hussein Shah. And the Nawab Hussein Shah wanted him to do his government service, and he refused to do his government service, and he was put into prison. So he had some money that was kept aside by his brother, Rupa Goswami, and he used that money to bribe the jailer. And the jailer had a good excuse, so Sanatan jumped in the river with his chains on, he drowned, you know, who knows what happened with Sanatan. So anyway, so he escaped from prison. And he thought, now I'm free and I don't have anything to worry about. But what he didn't understand at that particular point is that his servant who was accompanying him had 8 gold coins with him. So you were thinking, you know, 8 gold coins, you know, you're not going to broadcast it to the whole world that he has 8 gold coins. Okay. So what happens is that they come to mountain they wanted to go over, and there was a hotel and a hotel keeper, and the hotel keeper had an astrologer, or some guy who could figure out how much money people had. I guess astrologer, he could tell by certain signs or whatever, look at the sky or whatever. So this astrologer said to the hotel keeper that these guys, they have 8 gold coins with them. And the hotel keeper said, all right, we're going to kill them and take the old 8 gold coins from them. So Sanatana Goswami was very expert. He saw that the hotel keeper was acting really nice to him and saying to him, you know, whatever you want, sir, we'll give you. We're your humble servants. And Chanaka Pandit, who presents to us this Nittai Shastra, that means understanding in ordinary dealings how to interact with people, not exactly devotional service, but understanding ordinary dealings, which Srila Prabhupada gave us too. Sanatana Goswami was thinking, too much devotion is a sign of a thief. So he was thinking, what am I going to do? I must have something that this guy wants. We must be in a precarious situation. So he turns to his servant. His servant's name was Ishan. And he says to Ishan, how much money do you have with you? Do you have anything of value? And Ishan says, I have 7 gold coins. Now he lied to Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami said, you know, come on, give them to me. Not because Sanatana Goswami wanted them. So Sanatana Goswami went to the hotel keeper and said, here are these gold coins. I have no use for them. I'm a sannyasi. I'm renounced. Please help us cross the ocean. And the hotel keeper said to him, that I knew you had 8 gold coins by the words of my astrologer. And so this night I was getting ready to kill you, to take those gold coins. But thank God for giving me these gold coins so I'm not implicated in the sinful reactions of killing you first. And I will help you over the mountains. Don't worry. So the moral of the story is that when you have something, of course, most people don't have expert astrologers, but when you have something like that or you have a lot of possessions, it must be, well, at least, excuse me, this allergy. Of course, people at least be envious or at least want to attack you and take what you have. So you have to be very, very careful. And if you have nothing, then, excuse me, if you have nothing, then you have nothing to worry about. So, so I'm not advocating that. Excuse me. It's allergy season here. I'm not advocating that we just give up everything. But understand that when we do acquire more things in this world, it does cause some anxiety. Of course, one should be ready to take anxiety for Krishna. Just like, we have the temple here, and we're doing some building and doing so many things here for the deities. And but the more temple facility it is we have, the more anxiety is there just to take care of it. When things break down, and the more devotees that come, the more counseling they require, the more encouragement, the more prasadam they require. And so it's actually more stress. And we see that Srila Prabhupada voluntarily put himself into anxiety in order to serve Krishna. I mean, there's that typical example, famous example. When Prabhupada sent Tamal Krishna Maharaj to purchase the land in Mayapur, and there were so many dacoits around and everything like that. Prabhupada was in complete anxiety about Tamal Krishna Maharaj's safety. And he was relieved. He was up all night. Prabhupada couldn't take rest because he was in anxiety about that. Prabhupada also stated that he was in anxiety when he's not present, that the devotees would not take care of the deities properly. So you see that more possessions in this world create anxiety. However, the perfection of life... Let me turn off my phone. The perfection of life is to take anxiety for Krishna. Because that anxiety, as long as it doesn't interfere with one's performance of sadhana, and one's, which means one's hearing and chanting and dedication to the spiritual life, as long as it doesn't take away from that, that anxiety is purifying. Like if you're a businessman and you're making a lot of money and you're giving it to Krishna, and you're in anxiety, that anxiety is purifying. Because without anxiety, then you don't do anything in this world. So Prabhupada, he was very happy in Vrindavan before he left to go to America. In fact, you know, he's in Krishna's land, he was in touch with Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, all the Goswamis, living in the Radha Damodara temple. And so, even some people criticize Prabhupada for leaving Vrindavan at such an old age. But Prabhupada took the anxiety of managing or starting the Krishna Consciousness Movement and the stress of going into a strange country with practically no material resources to please Krishna. Now that's love. Now that anxiety, that distress is actually a very high stage of devotional service. Prabhupada actually said one time, an easy life and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. That's a very interesting quote. That means, you know, sometimes people want to retire at the ripe old age of 30. It's a joke. Or 40. But Prabhupada said an easy life and Krishna consciousness, it just doesn't go well together. Because where's the purification? Without opposition, another statement by Prabhupada, is that without opposition, where's the chance for glorious victory? So we need challenges. Without challenges, we don't progress in Krishna consciousness. If everything is going well, then what's the impetus to progress? So we as preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement should be voluntarily thinking we want more and more for Krishna. Like Prabhupada had that example that he gave one time, that there was one impersonalistic guru, or impersonal guru, if you can call him a guru. He was pushing away money, and Prabhupada said, you can take a picture of him, that is Prabhupada, pulling in the money and using it for Krishna. Because a devotee sees that everything belongs to Krishna. And so he's willing to actually stick his neck out to serve Krishna, to give up his own personal happiness for the happiness of Krishna. And as we mentioned last night, we were talking about the different manifestations of happiness or motivations in Krishna consciousness. I said in the beginning, yes, it's based on relief from all distress, the beginning of auspiciousness like that. But at the end, it's actually based upon one's motivation or impetus is based upon just seeing Krishna happy with one. A very simple thing. You know, Krishna's smiling. If Krishna's happy, then whatever else is happening in the world to them or to the world in general, that's fine. And if Krishna's unhappy, then even if everything else is going well in the world, then that's misery. Remember that. Anyway, that's a very high stage. Don't emulate. As far as the mode of ignorance is concerned, the performer is without knowledge, and therefore all his activities result in present misery, and afterwards he will go on toward animal life. Animal life is always miserable, although under the spell of the illusory energy Maya, the animals do not understand this. Never had an animal say, you know, I am miserable. Because the animals are just hankering for something. Hankering. I mean, there may be some peace sometime while they're sleeping, while they have a good master. Prabhupada would often talk about dogs. It's really interesting. Because Prabhupada would talk about dogs needing a master in order to be happy, and if they didn't have a master, they wouldn't be happy. And then Prabhupada would compare, forgive me, Prabhupada would compare the dogs without a master to someone with a degree from the university who's looking for a job. Looking for a master. This is very interesting. How? Anyway, it's very interesting. Slaughtering poor animals is also due to the mode of ignorance. The animal killers do not know that in the future the animal will have a body suitable to kill them. That is the law of nature. In human society, if one kills a man, he has to be hanged or hung. That is the law of the state. Because of ignorance, people do not perceive that there is a complete state controlled by the Supreme Lord. Every living creature is the son of the Supreme Lord, and he does not tolerate even an ant's being killed. One has to pay for it. Wow. So let me unpack that a little bit. So there's the story that Shrutikirti, Prabhupada's servant, told that he was massaging Prabhupada underneath or in a mosquito, an area that was covered by a mosquito net. And then there was a mosquito in that area. Like that. And he asked Prabhupada, can I kill him? And Prabhupada said, no. But when the mosquito landed on Prabhupada and was getting ready to suck Prabhupada's blood, Prabhupada said, kill him. He's an offender. He's attacking. So this is interesting. Every living creature is the son of the Supreme Lord. He does not tolerate even an ant's being killed. It's a very heavy statement. One has to pay for it. So indulgence in animal killing for the taste of the tongue is the grossest kind of ignorance. Now, okay, a question that is probably coming to everybody's mind is that, yes, we have a temple, and sometimes in the temple, insects come, particularly, as they say in Spanish, cucarachas. And for those of you who don't know what that means cockroaches. Should we kill the cockroaches? And that's a big question that devotees need to ask. Of course, Prabhupada said, first of all, prevention is the best thing. You know, if you keep everything sealed up, there's less opportunity for these creatures to come and pollute everything. On the other hand, even if you do keep everything sealed up, they will still come, because I've even experienced these creatures sometimes like to eat electronics, which you can't keep sealed up. So, in the case that the deity's service is being impeded, or the deity's safety or the cleanliness is being impeded, or the devotee's, let us say, health is being impeded, then and only then can you do something about the animals. There's some really heavy statements in the Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's purports that so a householder should see all the animals that are around the house like one's children. There has to be some discrimination, of course, but still unnecessarily to kill animals, like if you are not careful. So if you go out and you see an anthill and you decide, like some people do, to put gasoline, petrol in the anthill and light it on fire, that's a very sinful act. On the other hand, if you happen to be living in the south of the United States, where there's these ants that are called fire ants, that can literally kill someone, if you happen to get rid of them to protect the devotees, you're allowed to do that. So it's a judgment call. Like all of these injunctions, there has to be intelligence applied on how to carry out these injunctions. Or when do the injunctions apply and when do the injunctions not apply. So one has to be very, very careful. But as far as when it comes to killing animals, One has to be very careful about that. A living being has no need to kill animals because God has supplied so many nice things. He's talking about, Prabhupada's talking about eating meat here, of course. If one indulges in meat eating anyway, it is to be understood that he is acting in ignorance and is making his future very dark. Of all kinds of animal killing, the killing of cows is the most vicious because the cow gives us all kinds of pleasure by supplying milk. Cow slaughter is the gross act of the grossest type of ignorance. In the Vedic literature, in the Rig Veda 9.46.4, the words robi pranita matsaram indicate that one who, being fully satisfied by milk, is desirous of killing the cow, is in the grossest ignorance. There's also a prayer in the Vedic literature that states, and we're all familiar with this, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagadataya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. O Lord, you are the well-wisher of the cows and the brahmanas, and you are the well-wisher of the entire human society and world. Vishnu Purana 1.19.65. The purport is that special mention is given in that prayer for the protection of the cows and the brahmanas. The brahmanas are the symbol of spiritual education, and cows are the symbol of the most valuable food. These two living creatures, the brahmanas and the cows, must be given all protection that is real advancement of civilization. In modern human society, spiritual knowledge is neglected and cow killing is encouraged. It is to be understood then that human society is advancing in the wrong direction and is clearing the path to its own condemnation. A civilization which guides the citizens to become animals in their next lives is certainly not a human civilization. The present human civilization is, of course, grossly misled by the modes of passion and ignorance. It is a very dangerous age, and all nations should take care to provide the easiest process, Krishna consciousness, to save humanity from the greatest danger. Now, as far as cow killing is concerned, if one kills a cow, one will have to take birth, according to the Manusamhita and other literatures, as a cow for every hair that is on the cow's body. If you kill another animal, you will have to take one animal birth in that particular species. So please protect the cows. Not only stop killing cows, but cows are meant to be protected. And another thing, and I know this is not going to strike everybody as ecstatic, that if you are buying things that indirectly, or even directly, cause harm to a cow, or cause cows to be killed, or cows to be exploited, or their children to be exploited, or their children, which we're talking about calves right now, to be exploited or killed, there is some reaction for it. What can I say? If you're buying something, let's say Prabhupada, that's why Prabhupada prohibited leather. The devotee should not buy leather because he said leather is a product of violence. Cow killing. Now, if you can get leather like in a mridanga drum that absolutely, you're sure, comes from a cow that has already died or died naturally, that's another thing. So we have to be very careful about not getting implicated either directly or indirectly in this cow killing civilization. Very, very, very sinful. I was informed some time ago that India is, if not the largest, but one of the largest exporters of leather in the world. And the way that they would produce that leather is that they would march the cows into some state in India where cow killing is allowed. And I'm not going to mention which states that is. And then the cow would be immersed in this tanning solution while it was still alive, and they would rip the skin off of the cow. Such a sinful, sinful, sinful act to perform. So, anyway, so really be careful that whatever you're doing, you're not directly or indirectly implicated in the mistreatment of cows or any creature, but especially the cows. Okay, next verse. Satvat sanjayate gyanam rajaso lobha hi vacha pramada moha tamaso Bhavato Jnanameva Cha. Sattvat, from the mode of goodness. Sanjayate develops jnana, knowledge. Rajasaha, from the mode of passion, lobaha, greed. Eva, certainly. Cha, also. Pramada, madness. Moha, an illusion. Tamasa, from the mode of ignorance. Bhavataha, develop. Jnanam, nonsense. Eva, certainly. Cha, also. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, develop foolishness, madness, and illusion. And of course, you read about this before. This is a little bit repetitive. Purport. Since the present civilization is not very congenial to the living entities, Krishna consciousness is recommended. Through Krishna consciousness, society will develop the mode of goodness. When the mode of goodness is developed, people will see things as they are. In the mode of ignorance, people are just like animals and cannot see things clearly. In the mode of ignorance, for example, they do not see that by killing one animal, they are taking the chance of being killed by the same animal in the next life. Actually, I was listening to a memory of a conversation Prabhupada was having with some priests in Mexico. Okay. And two priests came to see Prabhupada. Originally, the cardinal was supposed to come, but the cardinal couldn't make it, so he sent these two priests. And one of the things that Prabhupada said, just to test them, he said that he was very much against this bullfighting, which is very famous in Mexico. It's a horrendous sport. When I was young, I went on a tour of the United States with a group of young people. And one of the things is we went to Mexico and Tijuana and saw a bullfight. And it was so disgusting. They would kill the bull with this big blade, and torture the bull while they were playing with it. And then at the end, they would cut off the bull's ears, and they would give the bull's ears to the prettiest girl in the audience. So disgusting. I was just nauseated by the whole thing. And I have a very clear memory of it, even though it occurred when I was 16 years old when I saw this. But I remember this as clear as it was yesterday. Just horrible, horrible. So Prabhupada, to test these priests, said, this bull killing must stop. And then the priest just about then left. And Prabhupada started laughing. You see, I've tested them. They are not Christians. Prabhupada said, they are not Christians. Because Christians would never be in favor of something like that. Real Christians. So, because people have no education and actual knowledge, they become irresponsible. To stop this irresponsibility, education for developing the mode of goodness, the people in general must be there. When they're actually educated in the mode of goodness, they become sober and in full knowledge of things as they are. Then people will be happy and prosperous. Even if the majority of the people aren't happy and prosperous, if a certain percentage of the population develops Krishna consciousness and becomes situated in the mode of goodness, then there is the possibility for peace and prosperity all over the world. Otherwise, if the world is devoted to the modes of passion and ignorance, there can be no peace or prosperity. In the mode of passion, people become greedy and their hankering for sense enjoyment has no limit. One can see that even if one has enough money and adequate arrangements for sense gratification, there is neither happiness nor peace of mind. That is not possible because one is situated in the mode of passion. If one wants happiness at all, his money will not help him. He has to elevate himself to the mode of goodness by practicing Krishna consciousness. When one is engaged in the mode of passion, not only is he mentally unhappy, but his profession and occupation are also very troublesome. He has to devise so many plans and schemes to acquire enough money to maintain his status quo. I mean, status quo means the present situation. It's a fancy way of saying that. This is all miserable. In the mode of ignorance, people become mad, being distressed. By their circumstances, they take shelter of intoxication, and thus they sink further into ignorance. Their future in life is very dark. I'll tell you something funny that I just found out yesterday. Sometimes I tell the devotees this story we learned when we were young. It was called the story of Rip Van Winkle. Now, for those of you who are not Americans, you wouldn't know that story. It's about a man who actually went to sleep for 20 years, Devotees disagreed with me last night. They said it was 100 years. It was actually 20 years, the story. And he woke up and the entire world was changed. Well, I found out yesterday that that story was based on true life. And what was that true life? That this man didn't go to sleep for 20 years, but de facto slept for 20 years. How? He got intoxicated. This man, it was in the 1700s in America. I mean, we're all thinking, you know, bars and everything is something nice and new and modern culture. We have so many nice bars. But bars and intoxication have been around since time immemorial. In fact, even in the spiritual world, there's the original form of intoxication. But that intoxication is bliss, love of God. And there's some manifestations of it. But in the material world, which is a reflection of the spiritual realm, then you have this gross intoxication, which actually makes one unconscious and act in such a way that's detrimental even to their own welfare. So what happened is this particular story is based upon a man named Rip Van Winkle, who basically had an argument with his wife, got intoxicated, disappeared for 20 years. And it happens. This is a true life story. Very, very interesting. So we should avoid all types of intoxication. Now, generally when we take our initiation vows, we say no intoxication like coffee, tea, cigarettes, marijuana. Because nowadays you have to cover all the bases, especially if you're in Fiji, you have to mention kava. Kava is like the local drink. It's like a relaxant, a muscle relaxant that people take and they or drink, and they just stay awake all night long talking nonsense. So, but we have to be careful of other types of effective intoxication. Effective intoxication means, let's say if we just like watch TV all day long, or play video games. I'm not saying that those are against the regulative principles, but what they do is they put you into, as Prabhupada described intoxication, he said intoxication means to go into an illusion within an illusion. In other words, we're in an illusion right now. What illusion are we in right now? We think we're this body. We think that we're members of a particular family, we think that we're of a particular nationality, we think we're a particular race, we think so many things that have nothing to do with reality because they're all very temporary, as we heard from the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, nasato vijate bhavo, nabhavo vijate sataha, ubiyorapi drishtavantas, twanyas takvadarshabhi. The sages say that those things which are temporary are unreal. So that's a sort of intoxication. Like if I start to, not me, of course, if someone takes intoxication and they think they're the greatest, you find that sometimes. Someone takes intoxication and they become like, oh, I'm wonderful. And that's an illusion. And when they come off of the intoxication, they realize they're just like useless, hopeless, whatever. So we're in this intoxicated state could last for upmost 100 years, or illusory state. But everyone in this world is intoxicated in that way. So if within intoxication, you go into another illusion, I mean, if you take some sort of intoxication, you go into another illusion, then that's an illusion within an illusion. Just like sometimes you may be dreaming at night. Not sometimes, usually you do dream at night. And then while you're dreaming at night, sometimes you dream that you're dreaming. And sometimes you dream that you dream that you're dreaming. So why put ourselves deeper into illusion that we have to be, or we don't have to be, than we are right now? So anyway, so this is why we have this injunction against intoxication. And we should examine our lives. The reason I'm talking about this is to see what things we do that are effective or de facto intoxication. Because we do things that are not directly breaking the regulated principles, but put us into an illusion within an illusion. And to get out of this illusion, chant Hare Krishna. Cheto Darpanam Arjanam, Bhava Mahatvagni Nirvapanam. When you chant the Lord's holy names, then you need mirror of the heart, the mirror of the mind becomes clarified, and one sees the self and the super self. You wake up. Or as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, jeev jago, gorachanda bole, kota nidra, yao maya pisa chira kole. Okay. All right, so I think we'll take some questions here. Okay. Wow, we got a big group here. Okay, let me take you off of mute so you can all ask questions. Wait a second. Okay. Who has a question, Nalini Kant?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Hare Bhav. What's your question?
Gurudev, what's the difference between anarthas and ignorance? Like, not breaking the regulative principles, but envy, anger, and competition with other devotees in negative sense. Is that ignorance as well?
You're talking about offenses?
Yes.
Offenses are actually very dangerous, especially against other Vaishnavas. One loses a taste for hearing and chanting. One has to be very careful in dealing with Vaishnavas. Actually, what I was asked a similar question about that today. What do you do when you have these negative thoughts about people, about Vaishnavas? Let's not talk about just people right now. Like we all do things like, there's this word, cop an attitude towards people. In other words, we give people a label. Oh, he or she is just this or that. What do you do about it? Well, what I do about it when these thoughts come to our mind, like if I think, oh, Nalini Kant, he's just a rascal. So when the thought comes, no, it doesn't come to my mind like that. I think you are adorable, Nalini Kant, not a rascal. So anyway, so when the thought comes to my mind about you or about anybody, that if it's negative, then immediately I'll start to praise them in my mind. You know, because we can find fault in anything. Just like you can look at the moon and see the spots in the moon, or you can look at the moon and think it's how beautiful it is. Actually, one time Krishna said to Radharani, your face is just like the moon. And Radharani got really upset because she said, you think my face has spots in it? So, no, anyway, it's an interesting pastime. So the point is, we can find fault in anybody, even Krishna. I mean, just like the other day, I was finding fault in Krishna. Not Krishna, Lord Ram. Because Lord Ram, what does he do? Just some washerman complains that, you know, that Ram accepted Sita Devi back when she was in Ravana's house for such a long period of time. And this washerman was saying this because he wanted to kick his wife out of the house. And so, what did Ram do? He said to Sita Devi, basically he said to Lakshman, you better drop her off in the woods. And I was thinking, I'm not happy with what he did. So you can even find fault in Lord Ram. Of course, there's a reason he did that. There's an esoteric reason and an exoteric reason. I understand that. But still, you know, it's not that everybody's happy that that happened. So you can find fault with anybody, but instead think of the good things. Everybody, at least all devotees, have so much overwhelming good qualities to them. And they may have a little speck of dust there, some habit from past activities or quirks or eccentricities that they have due to whatever reason. And then you just look at the good, then you start to glorify them in your mind. Oh, this devotee, even though, let's take a devotee who's really cheap, who doesn't want to spend money. You can just really get on his case. someone's raising their hands in the audience. Anyway, so a devotee is really cheap, and he's so stingy that you ask, you know, you're in the kitchen and you ask for some potatoes, and he brings you half a potato because it's a better price. Or potatoes with spots all over them, because it's cheaper. And he thinks the cooks, they can just cut the spots out. So anyway, you know, at least we got them as a donation. Anyway, I'm just teasing. So then you start to think, oh, that devotee is driving me crazy. The potatoes. But instead you should think, do a little switch in your mind and say, that devotee is so wonderful. He's just trying to protect Krishna's money from being spent. I really appreciate that good quality. But I sure as hell hope he gets better potatoes next time. That's funny. In other words, don't criticize devotees. Don't put labels on devotees. If they do something that you disagree with, just talk to them. They're just trying to serve Krishna. And that's the way I look at it. And appreciate their good qualities. Be like a honeybee. Madhumakhi. Be madhumakhi, not just a mucky.
Mucky.
Madhumakhi is a honeybee, and mucky is just like a fly. A fly goes after the bad stuff. So we should see the good qualities. Good qualities, just like that story I always told about that person named Pigpen, you know. The good quality is that he touched Prabhupada's feet. Besides that, didn't have too many good qualities. But then he developed all good qualities. So we should be like that. I mean, we're like one family, the family of devotees. Just like a parent has some son with some undesirable qualities, the parent still loves the son or daughter. So we should be like that with each other, especially with devotees. And with everybody, I mean, we should fan the spark of devotion in everyone's heart. That's how we bring people to Krishna consciousness. You fan the spark of devotion. So, is that all right? And that's how you deal with a critical attitude. What?
Gurudev, just to follow up on that. So, the ones who are unable to get rid of these anarthas, so then they go into ignorance mode and they can born as animals then?
The one who are not ready to get rid of the anarthas? No, a devotee is not going to be born as an animal, even if he has anarthas. As long as he's not breaking the regulated principles, as long as he's not eating meat or taking intoxication or anything like that. I mean, there are exceptions, like Bharat Maharaj, who was put into the body of a deer. Bharat Maharaj was not breaking the regulated principles, but he was put into the body of a deer. But he had his human memory there, his perfect memory of his last life. So this was actually a special arrangement. I mean, even when you make some general rule, many times there's special arrangements that Krishna makes for the devotee's benefit. And that was one special arrangement. But generally we can say that a devotee, someone who's taken up Krishna consciousness, is not going to be an animal in his next life, even if he has an arthas. The main thing is, if we want to have a taste for hearing and chanting, we should be thinking positively about the other devotees. If you do that, Krishna will appreciate it so much. Mm-hmm. All right?
Gurudev, sorry, just one more question within okay, that. Sometimes when we say regulative principles, subtle way we can contribute to that, like we don't eat meat, but we are in the same community where everything is happening and we buy products from the same supermarket or thing who are making money. Subtle
yeah,
thing.
That can't be avoided. One should minimize those things. Obviously, you're buying from the supermarket. The salaries of the people working in the supermarket are used for, you know, buying all sorts of abominable substances. The supermarket is buying all sorts of abominable substances, making profit from the things you buy, but you can't get out of it. As I said, one has to exercise intelligence in dealing with these things. Because you can. You're going to be at least a little indirectly connected with these activities going on. There's no way to avoid it. I mean, just like you buy petrol, the money that's going to the petrol station will be used by someone to buy meat. You know, just a simple thing like that. Or right now I'm using electricity. The people who work for the power company, that, you know, the power is being used to power pig farms here. And North Carolina is one of the biggest pig states in the world. There's more pigs in North Carolina than people. That's an interesting thing. I was also reading in Denmark, it was also Danish ham is famous. There's 60 million pigs in the country, and there's less than 10 million people. So, interesting statistic. So the point is that somehow or other we're always indirectly connected, but let's minimize that. Minimize it. Don't just be aware of what you're doing, how it's affecting other people, and how much you are connected. You can't eliminate the connection without going to the Himalayas and just like rejecting all of modern society. There's no other way to do that. So minimize it. It's practical. I mean, everything, you know, buying computers or talking, you know, anything I do is connected to, indirectly, to some nefarious activity in society. But just be careful, especially when in regard to cow killing. Anything connected to killing the cow, torturing the poor calves, torturing the bulls. And this is the most sinful activity one can actually think of. There is no more sinful activity than the torturing of cows. And Brahmins. Another thing is, yeah, it says human society means the protection of cows, Brahmins, old people, and children. And any society that doesn't protect these four classes is actually a very sinful society. Any society where women are exploited, cows are exploited, children are mistreated, exploited, or old people like me are not taken care of. That's a very sinful society. So you should all take care of me. All right, so who else has a question?
Runga Devi had a question. She typed it in.
Oh, she typed it in. Let me just look.
It's under Julian.
Anyway, I look at my chats. What if you are upset with a devotee for being critical? That's interesting. You can be upset with an action of a devotee. That's one thing. But if you give a devotee a bad name, you know, that devotee is useless, hopeless, hypercritical devotee, then that's really criticism of the devotee. You can criticize an action, but to criticize a devotee, and this is a fine line, of course, is another thing. And if you're upset with a devotee, it's all right to be upset with a devotee for being critical of others. Yeah. It's all right to be upset. Don't criticize that devotee. Two wrongs do not make a right. I mean, we do get upset with people for doing certain things. There's nothing wrong with that. We can't restrain ourselves from being upset. Okay? That's a good question. So, any other questions or comments?
Gurudev, can I ask something about cow protection?
Yes.
So, if a cow is suffering, what is the situation regarding euthanasia?
Do you suffer sometimes?
Yes.
Do you want me to put you out of your misery?
Do you want me to answer that question honestly?
No. Although, frankly speaking, we are against euthanasia. Because if any living entity is suffering, that's due to their, I hate to say this, karma. I mean, we could try to alleviate their suffering. I mean, certainly if a cow is suffering due to some disease, whoop, maybe you disappeared. In your little box where you were, disappeared. Oh, there you are. It's like Hollywood Squares. So anyway, so Hollywood Square, you know, really, really difficult. There's a lot of squares here. So the point is, yes, we can try to alleviate the suffering. Like if you were suffering through some bodily problem, then I would tell you to go to a doctor and get some anesthesia or something. It's like if a devotee has some terminal illness like cancer, then they would take some drug or something like that to actually alleviate their pain. But to kill a living entity before their time is not appropriate. It's not mercy killing. I mean, now, of course, I think in America, there was this one doctor called Dr. Death.
Kevorkian.
Kevorkian. And I think in one other country, it's actually legal. And I forgot which country it is right now. I think people can go there and be killed if they want.
Denmark.
Anyway, somewhere. Somewhere. But the point is, we have a certain amount of karma. We're put in that situation. It's not allowed for us to kill a living entity unnecessarily unless that living entity is attacking us. So I would be against it. I mean, of course, you have that story in the UK where they had cows, old cows, and the government took those cows away from them and killed them because the devotees refused to put them down. So we should not do that. We should not do that. It's actually very sinful to kill a living entity unnecessarily.
But especially people that have pets and dogs, cats, and even cows, when the pet or the animal is suffering immensely, you see it's in pain, it can't eat, it's certainly going to die anyway, then euthanasia is very common in the Western countries.
I know, unfortunately. I'll give you a story. Two of my disciples, a married couple, had a dog that was actually stopping to eat. He had cancer, very, very sick. So what did they do? Is they kept chanting to him, and he actually became absorbed in the chanting and was crying, hearing the holy names, and he left his body in such a way like that.
Wow.
And they were very merciful, and this dog was part of their family. And so that's what we should do. If someone's getting ready to leave their body, we should be around them and giving them the holy name, not kill them. And it's very sinful. Okay, someone sent a message here. Oh, it's a message about my birthday book from Leela Shakti to everybody. Okay, copy the message. It's time for birthday, which is at the end of October this year. So, all right, any other quick questions? Or problems? No. Everybody's happy. Natasha, it's good to see you. Hare Krishna. We'll be coming to Australia as soon as the Yamadutas let me come. Okay. No other questions. This is pretty interesting. Nobody else has questions here.
Can I ask Gurudev if no one has?
Uh-oh. Yes, you can ask.
Gurudev, I think I was listening from you in one of your lecture or was reading from a Krishna book where when Uddhava returns and he talks about Gopi's separation and there were some physical characteristics explain how they look in the separation from Krishna. How do we understand? Is it something similar to what Sanatan Goswami experienced as when he got these sores on the body and things like that?
I don't think so. No. Sanatan Goswami's sores were not manifestations of his love of God, but they were a test that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent to see Sanatan's devotion. It's a little bit different. That was different. I mean, I can't, it's because Sanatan Goswami went through the Jharkhand forest without eating or drinking. He drank water that caused these sores. And that was directly arranged by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that Lord Chaitanya could test Sanatan Goswami. The way he tested Sanatan Goswami is he had Sanatan Goswami come to see him, and Sanatan Goswami had two choices: to come through past the temple in Jagannath Puri or to come on the beach route. And the problem with the the route through the beach, sounds like a prasadam, beach route. So anyway, the problem with the route, the way through the beach, was that the beach sand was white hot, red hot or whatever you call it like that, and burnt his feet. And he chose the most difficult way to go see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he didn't want to pass by the temple door. He felt he would contaminate the pujaris who were actually serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this way, he passed Lord Chaitanya's test. And sometimes Lord Chaitanya puts us through tests. The symptoms of that test may not be symptoms of ecstasy, but they may be symptoms that, or arrangements by the Lord. Just like right now, I'm sneezing. It's not that he's sneezing. The sneezing I'm doing, of course, I sneezed a few minutes ago. The sniffling I'm doing is not a symptom of ecstasy. It's not that I want devotees after this class saying, oh, Guru Maharaj was in so much ecstasy. During the class, he was crying in ecstasy and tears were coming from his eyes like torrents of rain. And his nose was running, So we have to be careful not to mix those two things. All right?
Thank you.
And anyway, when devotees experience the symptoms of ecstasy, that bumps come on the body, that the bumps come and go. They don't just stay there for 6 months or 8 months. Because then if they stay there for 8 months, you better go see a doctor. So if I start to get those sort of symptoms of ecstasy, I'll go to see you, Nalini Kant, and have be treated for eczema. Okay. On that happy note, I think we should end. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see everybody tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is our Sunday feast in which you'll get a chance to eat virtual prasadam by the mercy of Radha and Krishna. Oh yeah, just one thing I wanted to show you all was very nice before. One of my dear disciples in Australia sent me all these necklaces for my deities, some of which we can use for Radha and Krishna. You see them all? There's 32 necklaces. She's such a great disciple that she sent all these beautiful necklaces, crystal necklaces and beads and all sorts of things. Isn't this beautiful? So some of them we'll use for Radharani and Krishna. I like Krishna too. And some of them we will actually, I'll use for my deities here. I was in ecstasy today getting these. Wonderful. I don't know if she's watching or not, but I just wanted to appreciate what great devotion she had sent all the way from Australia at a great cost to her. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Hari Bol.